Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. You're undoubtedly familiar with the old-school romance novel. A beefcake on the cover, perhaps a heterosexual couple. Harlequin has sold billions of these books since they took off in the 1970s. But the bodice ripper is evolving. Today's romance novels feature diverse protagonists, even including men. They offer more real-to-life scenarios and often mash in other genres like science fiction. In the last 5 years, booksellers have seen a 740% increase in the sales of LGBTQ romance novels. We'll talk about how romance publishing is trying to keep up with the times with authors Mia Sosa and Jasmine Guillory and New York Times critic Olivia Wade. That's all coming up next. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. The book business has undergone enormous change over the last 25 years, under pressure from new media and changes in how and where people buy books. Different authors are getting published too, and they're telling different stories. And that's true not just in literary fiction or sci-fi, but in that stalwart genre, a full third of the fiction market, the romance. Yes, there's still sex and love, but increasingly, who gets to be in a romance and how they find fulfillment reflects the actual diversity of the country. This show was actually inspired by KQED's own Bud Gundy, who you may know from the Pledge Drive, which is still ongoing, please donate, etc. The publisher of his most recent book, Inherit the Lightning, is Bold Strokes Books, which has been publishing queer romances since 2004. And that story got us looking at the many ways that the genre has evolved. So joining us this morning to talk about the neo-romance, we have a great panel. Up first, we've got Jasmine Guillory. She's a novelist and writer. Her latest book is Drunk on Love. She lives in Oakland. Welcome, Jasmine.
Thank you so much, Alexis. Thrilled to be here.
Yes. It's nice to be on the radio with you and not waiting in line at Market Hall.
Indeed.
We're also joined by Mia Sosa. She's the author of The Wedding Crasher and The Worst Best Man. Welcome, Mia.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And we're joined by Olivia Waite. She is the New York Times romance novel reviewer, also the author of The Hellion's Waltz and The Care and Feeding of Waspish Widows, among other novels. Welcome, Olivia.
Hi there. Thrilled to be here.
So romance is this extremely, extremely popular genre. But I kind of want to get into the qualities of, like, why is one book a romance novel and another just a novel? So in your mind, Mia, like, how do you think of, like, what makes a novel a romance novel?
In my mind, and I think this is an accepted definition, there is a central love story that ends in a happily ever after, otherwise known as an HEA, or a happily for now, which is an HFN. So if you've got those two pieces, then you've got a romance novel. If there's a situation where there is a central love story, but the people in that pairing don't end up together, or something terrible happens and it doesn't end on an optimistic note, then you're talking about a love story and not a romance.
A romance. Jasmine, does that check out for you that it needs an HEA, happily ever after, or HFN, happily for now? Just really appreciating the jargon here.
Yes, absolutely. Mia's totally right. I think when people are going into a romance, that is what they're looking for. And so it is not to say that some people want to read a love story that ends tragically. That's great for them. But if people are looking to read a romance novel and you don't get that ending, they will be very upset. I would be very upset.
Olivia, how about a book like 50 Shades of Grey? Was that considered like a true romance, or was that just something that was kind of romance adjacent?
Well, the three volume romance is an old, old form going all the way back to the Gothics and like the Northanger Abbey era. So the fact that you had these three book arcs for a single couple was not necessarily anti-romance, especially because each book has its own sense of resolution. So it's an overall building arc, but each individual installment ends on that HFN. So I didn't see that 50 Shades was really doing anything shocking or frightening as a romance author.
Got it. You know, these novels are also somewhat famously have these tropes. Elizabeth Harris in the New York Times was kind of listing out a few. She was saying enemies to lovers, friends to lovers, there's only one bed, amnesia, time travel, the secret prince, the secret millionaire, the secret baby. When you're working on one of these newfangled romances, Jasmine, what's your relationship to those traditional tropes of the, you know, old school romance novel?
Oh, I love a trope. I mean, my first book was very much a fake dating book, which is a big romance trope. I love the fake dating trope. I had so much fun writing it. But I also think it's really important in tropes to pay attention to the things that the audience loves about those tropes. And also to kind of put your own spin on it, right? Like, I think you don't want to write the same book over and over again, but you also do want to nod to why people love those tropes, why those tropes are fun, why people say like, oh, I want an enemies to lovers book because, but also like have fun with it. I think that's one of the great things about romances is that the right people writing them are having fun with all the different kinds of tropes. And even if you read, you know, a whole bunch of different fake dating books, they will all be different in their own way. And I think that's one of the things that I love about romance.
Wait, what is fake dating?
Oh, okay. Let me tell you. Fake dating is when the central couple is pretending to the rest of the world, or at least to a certain portion of their audience in the book, that they are dating, but they're really not dating. And then they fall in love. That's the key. And then they fall in love. So in my first book, The Wedding Date, he was pretending to the people at the wedding that she was going to that they had been dating for a while because he wanted a date to the wedding. So she was pretending to be his new girlfriend. And then they fall in love.
And I don't want to give away too much about your new book, but there may be some fake dating in the new book as well.
There is, but it's sort of a twist on it in the new book. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mia, did you grow up reading romance novels? Like, do you have favorites or ones that you really like remember?
I absolutely grew up reading romance novels. I often remember that I went to in East Harlem, which is where I grew up, and I went there ostensibly to work on homework. And ended up roaming the library in order to figure out what I would read and found romance that way. And I've been reading romance throughout my life since I was young. And when I was practicing law, romance was my escape when I had really tough cases that I had to deal with. And I remember romance authors whose books really made me feel like I had found home, like I had found a place of comfort. I thought of Sandra Kitt and Brenda Jackson. There is a book by Brenda Jackson, True Love, that is still sort of one of those books that I think of and is on my shelf, and I read it from time to time. I cannot remember a moment in my life when I wasn't reading romance. So it's wonderful to see that people are finding it, but I'm also sort of just thinking about all of those folks who have been reading romance for decades.
And I mean, in those older romances, was there a diversity of characters at play, or was this kind of a suburban, the protagonist tended to be a middle-class white woman? Like, how did that work?
Well, I remember certainly the Harlequins that I grew up on, that was precisely what I read. I mostly read white people in very rich circumstances getting their happily ever after. And that was kind of what I was used to until I got older and then realized there were all of these other books that I could explore. Mm-hmm. And there were authors of color who were also telling those stories. And so then I was able to access those books as well. But yes, there certainly my start was in a very white and rich world. And I'm so glad that that world has expanded.
Yeah. Olivia, wait, you know, a similar kind of movement seems like has been happening in sort of the LGBTQ romance space. Is there a, you know, obviously there'd been an underground literature of this for a very long time, but when did this start to kind of like break into the mainstream romance world?
Well, it's definitely been exciting to see how many trad pub queer romances we've had in the past few years. It's been a staggering number. It feels like an embarrassment of riches. I do want to point out something. When Mia Sosa was talking about Sandra Kitt and Brenda Jackson, it points out the fact that we know Harlequins are primarily white, that they're this very like white, straight fantasy escape kind of thing. But not all of them are like that. It's so easy to say, oh, we're doing diversity now, but we weren't doing diversity then. And that's not necessarily always true. Vincent Verga was writing queer romances for Avon back in the 70s. But the readers who are finding those diverse romances now weren't around for the last time. So it comes in cycles. And there's this really interesting generational thing that happens where we start to see authors of color and queer authors get a foothold and then they kind of vanish again. And then we have to rediscover them in the next generation. It's this constant kind of forgetting. And it's a little astonishing to see, but I'm really glad that we're in the discovery process of that cycle now.
We are here talking about this wave of new romance novels, which are centering really a wider diversity of protagonists and enjoying a rise in popularity. We're joined by Olivia Waite, who's the New York Times romance novel reviewer, as well as an author in her own right, of, for example, The Hellion's Waltz. Also joined by Mia Sosa, author of Wedding Crasher, The Wedding Crasher, and The Worst Best Man. And Jasmine Guillory, novelist and writer. She's got a new book out, Drunk on Love, and her work has appeared in a bunch of great magazines like Bon Appetit, Cosmopolitan, Oprah, etc. She lives here in Oakland. We want to hear from you. Do you read romance novels? And have you ever hidden the fact that you read them? And what do you enjoy about the romance novels that you read, either the old school version or this new generation of books? You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or KQED Forum. The email is forum@kqed.org. One listener writes, I remember how as kids we used to hide the romance novels that we were reading behind textbooks. It was considered embarrassing to be reading them, but everyone was. I had a friend who in 10th grade ripped through 73 Harlequin novels in one summer. We didn't start to worry about her. Now it feels okay to be reading these, especially with those with covers that look like the rest of the books out there. I'm Alexis Madrigal. This is Forum. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We are talking about the newfangled romance novels of today, which have a diversity of protagonists and are enjoying a new rise in popularity. We're joined by Jasmine Guillory, novelist and writer. Her latest book is Drunk on Love. And Mia Sosa, perhaps best known for The Worst Best Man, one of her novels. And Olivia Waite, who is the New York Times romance novel reviewer. And we do want to hear from you. If you're an old school romance reader, you've been reading for a long time, what do you think of the changes that you're seeing and what's being published? And if you're a new romance reader, in fact, it seems like the audience is getting younger in a lot of ways, what's brought you to this genre? You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, KQED Forum, and the email is forum@kqed.org. So Jasmine, you know, Refinery 29 ran a story in which, you know, one of your books played a role where they're talking about kind of this new class of books and the different kinds of covers, like one of our listeners was referencing, and talked about this class of books as following people seeking to find equitable partnership in the modern day. And so I wondered, within that context of this new, the new romance, there's still a lot of sex scenes that go into these romance novels. And what do you think is different about writing them for you now than maybe someone would have written them, you know, in a traditional 70s romance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key really is consent. I think that both people in the partnership go into the sex scenes with not just consent, but enthusiastic consent, which I think is really important. I think in, you know, a lot of older books, not all of them, obviously, but in some, it was definitely more of like sort of convincing the woman to have sex, she who may have been reluctant. And I think women in romance novels that I read today go into it very excited to have sex. And I think that makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. I think it makes it a lot more fun for all of us to read and write.
Mia, how about you?
I think the way that I approach it is, again, like Jasmine said, consent is key. But I'm also looking at what's changing between the pairing, what's gonna make this different about them or different about their relationship. Sex is just not sex on the page for the sake of sex on the page. Mm-hmm. There's something that changes in the relationship as a result of that. And it's not necessarily that they grow closer. It could be a turning point, but there's something that's happening in that scene. And there's a reason why that scene is there.
Mm, right, it's driving the action forward of the plot.
Correct, in some way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I wonder, Mia, same with you, you know, pornography, you know, largely because the internet has become kind of an ever more widely distributed force, and particularly for young people who've kind of been steeping in those tropes since they were very young. How do you think that's changed romance writing?
I think people feel freer to write what they've always wanted to write. And I think that aren't clutching their pearls to see precisely what we know many people are doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Olivia, how about you? As someone who's, you know, constantly surveying the scene, do you see kind of the marks of you know, the rise of really widely distributed pornography as changing things?
I don't happen to think that modern people are uniquely filthy in that regard. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of my research is historical, and a lot of it is like historical pornography and historical erotic texts. And people have always been horn dogs is kind of what keeps coming up over and over.
I feel like that's the first horn dog on forum. I feel like we should mark this milestone.
Well, glad to be of service. But there is this sense somehow that the internet invented sex, and we have these conversations, and I'm just thinking back to all of the absolute nastiness I read in while taking Greek and Latin as an undergrad. And we can talk about like levels of mass distribution and access, because it's certainly easier to find it than if we were, say, a gently bred debutante, the daughter of a duke, who didn't have access to Google image searches or Tumblr.
Hypothetically.
Gifts. But yeah. Hypothetically, yes. But I mean, those gals still had, you know, collections of naughty etchings, like Emo D is a classic. So this sense that somehow society is changing because we're like hyper pornographied is really very, I find it very ahistorical. Hmm. Because like, yeah, like I said, people have always been horn dogs. They find their smut, they create it if they can't find it. It's one of the most reassuring things about humanity is we're always all going to horny jail. It's great.
Let's take our first call. We've got Rosa in San Francisco. Welcome, Rosa.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I've been listening to you since you came on the air, and your previous, your predecessor was on, and I enjoy Forum much more with you on the air. Thank you so much for being there. But with respect to romance novels, I have been reading romance novels for decades. My husband introduced me to romance novels. He brought me my first romance book. And while it doesn't have a lot to do with it, you know, I was in an interracial relationship, but the book he brought me was not that. It wasn't Sandra Kidd or anything like that. And my soapbox about romance novels over the years have been, I've always read them openly. I never covered the covers, excepting when I would ride Muni and people would tell me what was happening in it, what was the end of the story.
You're like, no spoilers.
Yeah. I'm serious. I would sit on the 22 and people would read over my shoulder and tell me what was going on. Anyway, but my soapbox about romance novel and talking to people and people being snide about romance novels is women read, and we read romance novels in tremendous numbers. You talked about the business and how much money there is in this. And this has brought some publishing houses have survived over romance novels and women reading. And it allowed them to publish and support poetry, science, and just to bring up other emerging authors because they had this bank that came from romance novels. I started reading romance novels in the typical tropes, either Regency or Americana, things like that. But as time has gone on, you know, I've always been open to what's going on now. I've read Ms. Sosa's books, and I also look around what's going on. I've found libraries to be a great resource. The librarians read them. They don't talk about it, but they read them. And I've gone to different libraries, and the librarians have suggested different books. And I would say that the thing is to read. And, you know, like the authors are intelligent, thinking people. And yeah. There are things to be learned, and there are worlds to be open. And as another side, I started reading the Outlander books when they first came out, and Diana Gabaldon wrote them. And I remember her saying, they asked her how she wanted her books to be published. And they said, okay, if we do it as a fantasy novel, we're going to publish, say, for example, 100,000 copies. But if we do it as a romance novel, we're gonna print a 500,000 copies. This isn't accurate, but that's just
right.
She says, make them romance novels. And over the years, I've watched her books grow and the world open to the history that happened during those times, learning things about plants. And so that's basically what I wanted to say. You know,
Rosa, thank you so much.
You know,
you know what you're going to find funny? Our next caller is, in fact, a librarian who reads romance novels. Rosa, thank you so much. Fantastic call. Thank you for calling in. Let's bring in Amy in Oakland, who is, in fact, a librarian. Welcome, Amy.
Hi. I am thrilled to be here. And, so I'm a librarian. As a young child, I read romance novels, and it was kind of like a secret shame. Even though as a librarian, I am completely, you know, whatever you want to read is great because you're reading, as the previous caller said. But what changed my secret shame is I read Infidel by Ariane Hershey Ali. And this is a book about a Somali woman who escaped Somalia because her family was going to, she was going to go through the female rites of passage, and she escaped Somalia. And, but what's important about it is that there was this paragraph, two paragraphs in the book that talked about how Harlequin romances were the books that the girls had to read, and they shared them secretly in the school, and it changed their lives because it was the first thing that had ever occurred to them that there was female desire. And it changed and radicalized all of these Somali girls' lives. Hmm. Oh, my God. My shame went away.
Hmm. Hey, thank you for that, Amy. You know, Jasmine, I think, you know, sometimes romance novels are dismissed by people. And it seems that at least one aspect of it is that they are so fully centered on women's pleasure in at least in a historical sense of these books. Do you think that's, it's just kind of a part of like a pretty basic misogyny or lack of care that has caused romance novels to be dismissed by some people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so much kind of scorn towards romance novels, and it's really mostly by people who have never read them. And it's really just, I think, misogyny. You know, these are books that are mostly geared towards women. They're not all written by women or about women, but the target audience is mostly women. And I think that is what makes people kind of look at them like there's something wrong with them, when these are usually people who have never even stepped foot in the romance section of a bookstore or a library or cracked a book open.
Yeah. And Mia, how about you? How do you think about sort of what it is that romance novels sort of can unlock for people?
Gosh. I think a lot about the past few years, and, you know, we've gone through a pandemic, and in that time, I have received countless messages from readers saying how much my books have affected them, have allowed them to escape a really tough time, to reconnect with a sense of empathy. You know, I think for many years, even as a reader, I kind of thought of romance novels as entertainment, and there is no question they are. But there are so many life lessons. There are so many things that readers gain from reading romance, from learning about having positive and healthy relationships, about asking for what you want, about communicating with your partner. I mean, I think there's so much that can be unlocked there for readers if they take the chance and read a romance. There is a reason why there are so many romance books that are sold. And it's because readers are coming to it for a variety of reasons, but there is so much depth in the genre, and there is so much to be gained from just opening that book and reading that journey and seeing how two people communicate and find a way to live a happy and satisfying life together.
Or at least happily for now. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's bring in Buddy from Story, Wyoming, one of the all-time great name-place combos on the show. Welcome, Buddy.
Thanks for having me, Alexis. I love you, man, and love your show. And this is a great one. But hey, I often wonder, I had, you know, married a high school sweetheart. We were together for 24 years. She read romance novels the whole time. And oftentimes I would look over at her on the couch, and she would be smiling, and I would say, what's going on in there? And she would say, you wouldn't understand. And, I'm a log home builder, so I stay in shape mostly and, you know, try to be romantic, at least on Valentine's Day or something. And, and then I got married again to a much younger woman who read romance novels, and I think in the end, that the expectations of us, we fail those expectations as men, first of all, because we're not reading romance novels. And I think we have to market it more to men. If this is what our women are reading, then we need to know what their expectations are. And your guest, who was talking about this,
well, you could learn
just now. Yeah, that we could learn something and maybe learn the male side of communication, because oftentimes, well, in both of my marriages, I'm 52 now. I don't think I'm going to give it a shot again, but I think that they have an expectation, but they don't often communicate it well to us. You know, they don't tell us what they want or are looking for. And of course, you know, we're just Neanderthals walking around here. And
buddy, I think you need to go down to the paperback bookstore right now, right after this show, on your break, and get Jasmine Guillory's new book, Drunk on Love. I honestly truly believe this. Thank you so much for that call, buddy. Yeah. And Jasmine, you know, I feel like I'm already concocting a romance novel about a log home builder in Story, Wyoming, who decides to read romance novels in order to, you know, like a novel within a novel kind of situation, decides to, you know, learn how to like rebuild himself as man.
I think that would be a delightful book. And actually, it's very funny because one of my cousins, I have a big family, mostly based in the Bay Area. And one of my cousins got a number of dates by reading my first book on BART. So I will say, like, it worked.
Like, literally would just be sitting there reading it and people would come up and be like,
yeah.
Oh,
what are you reading? Yeah.
That better than a puppy, you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Almost as good. But I will say, I think, you know, Buddy has a great point. Like, I think one of the things that I love about romance novels is that they do have good communication between people. And when they don't have good communication, they sort of figure it out, you know? And I think that's one of the things that I really think about when writing is like, how do these people communicate and how is it difficult for them to communicate? And then how do they resolve these issues? Because I think these are all important things for all of us to figure out.
Yeah. We're talking about romance novels. These are a new breed that we are talking about. We're joined by Jasmine Guillory, novelist and writer. Her latest book is Drunk on Love. Mia Sosa is the USA Today bestselling author of The Wedding Crasher and The Worst Best Man. And Olivia Waite is the New York Times romance novel reviewer, also author of her own books, The Hellions Waltz and The Care and Feeding of Waspish Widows. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after this break. Welcome back to Forum. That's D'Angelo, of course. A romance novel in 30 seconds of a song right there. We are talking about romance novels. Today's romance novels are changing, centering a diversity of protagonists and enjoying a new rise in popularity. We're joined by Jasmine Guillory, novelist and writer. Latest book is Drunk on Love. Mia Sosa, USA Today bestselling author of The Wedding Crasher and The Worst Best Man. And Olivia Waite, New York Times romance novel reviewer. Really enjoying taking your calls and comments on this one. People's different thoughts about how romance might apply to them, both the newfangled and the old school romance novels. You can, of course, give us a call at 866-733-6786 or chime in on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, where we're KQED Forum, and the email's forum@kqed.org. You know, Olivia, there's some people with specific shout-outs for specific romance authors, and I thought I might toss this one to you. Callie writes, have you all talked about Helen Huang, an autistic author who centers her novels on autistic heroines? They're great stories and I think expand people's understanding of autistic women and their lived experiences and immense capabilities. Olivia, you
there? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Helen Huang, I remember reading her first book, I think it was The Bride Test. And my gosh, the way she gets into someone's head, and like, it's a rare gift in a storyteller to really bring somebody else's perspective that fully to life so that you lose the wall between yourself and the book.
Mm.
And that's always something I'm looking for in a romance. And it's not just about beautiful sentences and well-crafted prose, although I love that as well. There's a connection that happens when somebody really invites you into the character. Yeah. And that's something that romance does uniquely and spectacularly well. And Helen Huang is one of the current greats doing it. Yeah. I would also be remiss as a critic if I didn't mention Quanah Jackson's Bromance Book Club. So Bud in Story, if you want books about men reading romance novels to better learn about the women they're in relationships with, there's your series starter. Again, that's by Quanah Jackson. It's called the Bromance Book Club. She's got a few more in the series out now as well. So there's plenty to read there.
That's Lissa K. Adams.
It is Lissa K. Adams. What is Quanah Jackson? Real Men Knit. That's the one.
Right.
Thank you so much.
This is why we have the panel, you know? We're lifting each other up here.
We absolutely do that all the time. That's the beauty of the genre.
It really does seem, Mia, like there that the romance world is in fact like a world. Like you can enter it and it has its own, you know, stars and kind of character types and conferences. Like all that is still the case, right?
That is the case. Alexis, I know you love learning the lingo, so we even have a name for that, which is Romancelandia.
And
Romancelandia is where everyone loves romance and wants to support romance. And what I've really loved about being a part of the romance genre is how supportive people are with each other. None of the people on today's panel are new to me, you know, and that's a lovely thing. We know of each other, and I think people really want to support what we're doing because we're so proud of the genre as a whole.
Wow. Let's bring in one of your fans, Mia. Nathan in Oakland, welcome.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to say, Mia, thank you for your amazing writing. My girlfriend and I, we had been reading different books to each other for a while and thought we'd try something new. And, you know, we don't focus on it terribly much, but I'm white and she's black. So we were looking for, you know, a couple in a romance novel that would represent that. And we found The Worst Best Man, which we had a real big joy in reading. We thought the pacing and the humor was really wonderful. And we were kind of curious. One thing that she really appreciated was like less of a focus on like skin tone and different things like that, and more so on the culture. And I was curious, was that a personal choice or was that like an editor's, you know, suggestion when you were going through it?
Absolutely. Well, first I should say thank you so much. That was a incredibly sweet thing to say about my books. And I'm so glad that you've read them and I appreciate that very much. But in terms of choices in the story, I think for me, the important thing is not the fact of an interracial relationship in the two stories that I wrote in which there is an interracial relationship, but more so, that these are two people who come together and deserve a happily ever after, and this is their dynamic. And I like to explore that dynamic, but I don't want it to be the reason for the story or the central conflict. It's never a conflict in my stories. And in fact, I create worlds where that's not an issue and everyone kind of embraces the multiculturalism around them.
You know, Jasmine, I wanted to ask you about another aspect of this. There's at least some, you know, anecdotal evidence from authors and the sort of rise of book talk, which for those who don't know is, you know, people who read books on TikTok and tend to drive sales to books that can go viral within that platform. And I wanted to ask about, you know, the traditional romance audience was conceptualized to be sort of like women between like 30 and 50 kind of situation. Do you think that romance is beginning to skew younger? And if so, do you have a theory there?
You know, I think this goes back to something that Olivia said earlier. I think romance has always skewed younger. We just didn't talk about it, right? I think there have always been teenagers or younger reading their parents' books. And, you know, people in their, I think there was always a certain point where people in their 20s would kind of pretend that they were over romance. But now everybody's just talking about it. And I think that's great. And so I have definitely seen, I just had a bunch of book events over the past week, and I have seen a bunch of moms coming with their daughters, like, you know, moms in their 50s and their daughters in their 20s coming together to book events. I love that. Lots of like family groups all reading the same books. And sometimes it's the moms who got their daughters into romance, and sometimes it's vice versa. The daughters saying, like, I convinced my mom to read your books, and now we read them together. And so I think it has always skewed, you know, the audience has maybe been targeted at women in their, you know, 30s to 50s, but women in their teens and 20s have always read romance. Now it's just a thing that everyone is talking about more.
Yeah. Let's bring in Esther in Mountain View. Welcome, Esther.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
I especially interested in the diversity angle from the point of view of having Jewish...
Oh, no. I think we lost her. I know what she was going to ask was going to be about that there weren't a lot of Jewish heroines in the romance novels of yore. And Olivia, it feels like there has been an increase in all the different kind of types of protagonists that exist. And maybe you could talk about a few of those kind of more unusual protagonists that you've encountered in your reviewing work.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been like I've been saying for a few years now, we are really in a golden age of romance writing. There's plenty of Jewish romance out there for the finding. My good friend Rose Lerner just has a new one out that's a queer Jewish romance. She has a great backlist of small town Jewish historical romances that are spectacular. There's Rosie Danan, who's writing a rabbi hero with a porn star heroine, who's now a sex educator. It's just incredible stuff. Her first book, The Roommate, is also incredibly steamy and gorgeous. We've got, I know Stacey Agdern is writing, Eva Lee and Zoe Archer have Jewish characters. Felicia Grossman writes historical Jewish heroines and heroes in America. Philadelphia, I know her first book is set in. There is so much. Wow. There is so much more than I can list here. It's such a gift, but the general rule is, if you can think of a romance about it, somebody's probably writing it. The only question is, how do you find it?
Right.
It's out there somewhere. You can get as granular as you want and somebody will have written it. You just need to find out where they are.
That's so interesting. Jasmine, I wanted to ask you this question from Madeline. I'm an avid fan fiction reader. Do you find that the prevalence of fan fiction has had an influence on the romance novel industry?
Oh, I'm sure. There are a lot of writers I know who got their start in fan fiction. I know Christina Lauren, who are two women who write as a team, met each other because they were writing fan fiction together, and now have, you know, sold a ton of books. And I love their books. They're hilarious. And I think, and there are lots of others too. So I think that is, you know, there are a lot of people now writing who started writing because of fan fiction. It sort of got them into writing and got them like kind of to fall in love with writing. And then they started coming up with their original stories. So, and I think that has also brought a lot of readers into romance too, either as they see some of their favorite authors, fanfic authors, start writing, you know, traditionally published romance, or as they see, you know, oh, I like reading this, maybe there's a book like that. And then they find out, look, there's a whole section in a bookstore like that.
Yeah. Yeah, Mia, do you ever read the fan fiction that's out there about other things and think about it as part of your kind of writing constellation?
I am one of the few romance authors who doesn't read fan fiction. And, there are, I know I have many romance author friends who read fan fiction on a regular basis. It's just never been something that I've been drawn to. And now I realize, you know, I'm probably missing out on a whole lot.
This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. That means Pledge. And one of the people who runs Pledge is Bud Gundy, who inspired this very show. For more information on how to support Bud, how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. So we have another call. We have Steve in Sebastopol. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 74. My wife is 61. She is very vibrant sexually, and I'm not. And so we came up with this idea that we would possibly do a threesome. However, I'm thinking a good book, because we both read, might do the trick. Do you know any authors that have that scenario that we could read?
Yeah. Thank you for that, Stephen. Thanks for sharing that with us. I'm going to just throw this one to Olivia.
So you're, just to be clear, you're looking for a book about a poly couple who opens it up?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, it's been a while. I'm rusty on my kink recommendations, but the first one that comes to mind, it's an older book. It's called, I think it may be out of print, unfortunately, but it's lovely. It's called The Submission Gift. It's by an author called Solace Ames, and it's about a couple, and she works in a restaurant. I forget what he does for a living, but it is about they have a threesome as his gift to her for an anniversary. And it's all about the emotions between the three of them as they develop into this triad romance. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderfully done. It's just a lovely, gorgeous, incredibly hot contemporary.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love it because she paints those emotions so vividly, where even like small little relationship negotiations feel so vital, and your heart catches in your throat because what are they going to say to this? And it's lovely to see somebody make those small nuances of really complex relationships feel so world-changing. So yeah. Solace Ames is where I'd go. Rebecca Weatherspoon also has a contemporary, I think it's Haven, that's about a couple opening themselves up to a third. And that's in her series that starts with Sanctuary. And yeah, so Rebecca Weatherspoon, they're one of my go-to authors for anything contemporary and queer. Yeah. They've been writing queer books for forever, and they've been really a guiding light. So you can't go wrong with their work as well.
Got another listener comment here. One listener writes, I started reading romance in middle school and have never stopped. People are judgmental about romance novel readers, and I have been told that I wouldn't be taken seriously as a professional if people knew I read so many romance novels in my personal life, so I have always kept it a secret. As a Black professional woman, I don't need to give people more excuses to marginalize me. Right now, I have been reading a ton of paranormal romance, also reading a lot of Amazon self-published romance. Though I always know the ending, the ride is where the real magic is. If the author is really creative, then I get really caught up in the journey. One fact we happen to know about both you, Mia Sosa, and you, Jasmine Guillory, is that you were both lawyers before you became romance novel authors. And did you ever have some of these feelings as professional people that romance would be something that could be like a mark against you? And we'll go to try you, Mia.
I don't know that I thought it would be a mark against me, but I never felt comfortable sharing that I loved romance novels. And I remember when I was practicing and had to travel into DC and I was on the metro, I totally would hide what I was reading. When people, even in the work context, would talk about what they were reading, I never mentioned the romance novels that I read. And it's a shame. And it's one of those things that I regret because it's so bizarre. I mean, they're, you know, it's odd because on the one hand, society encourages commitment and tells us that finding a partner is it can be a goal in life. And on the other hand, the genre that depicts that journey to finding a romantic partner is derided as ridiculous, as setting unrealistic expectations, which now that I'm wiser, tells me more about the people deriding the genre than the people reading it. It's just never made sense. But I too was that person who hid what I was reading on the metro, and it's a shame. And what I think I've enjoyed in the past few years is sort of seeing people embrace romance novels and be very vocal about their love of romance novels. And I think that's freeing other people to sort of say, what is wrong with it? What is wrong with reading romance? I actually think it's a wonderful thing. And there are all kinds of reasons to read romance. So the shame, there's no place for the shame anymore.
Yeah, definitely seems like you're getting at the point that there's a deep underlying truth to these romance novels that despite everything else in the world, people do continue to try and find partners for love and sex and everything else. We have been talking about romance novels, the new kind, the old kind, everything in between. We've been joined by Mia Sosa, the best-selling author of The Wedding Crasher and The Worst Best Man, Jasmine Guillory, novelist and writer. Her latest book is Drunk on Love. She's a Oakland's own. And Olivia Waite, the New York Times romance novel reviewer and author of The Hellion's Waltz and The Care and Feeding of Waspish Widows. I'm Alexis Madrigal. This has been fun. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Heising-Simons Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.